Grant me, O Lord, a hurler's skill, with strength of arm and speed of limb, unerring eye for the flying ball, and courage to match whate'er befall. May my stroke be steady and my aim be true, my actions manly and my misses few. No matter what way the game may go, may I rest in friendship with every foe. When the final whistle for me has blown, and I stand at last before God's judgment throne, may the great referee, when he calls my name, say, you hurled like a man, you played the game. That's the hurler's prayer, Joe, and this is our day. Not Kilkenny's, not Tipperary's, not Galway's. This is the day of the hurling people. It doesn't matter if you're from Ballygalgett in Down, or Ballysagard in Waterford, Kilmallock in Limerick, or Kilmiley in Kerry, St Mullins in Carlow, or St Finbar's in Cork. Everybody loves All-Ireland final day. It has given so many great moments, emotions and winters to so many counties. Who will forget 1996 when Wexford became champions and every man, woman and child in Ireland knew the words to the purple and gold and dancing at the crossroads? What about the thunder and lightning final of 1939? And we will always remember 1989 as the glens of Antrim emptied as the saffrons marched across Park. We've had wonderful captains who have captured the emotions of All-Ireland final day so beautifully. Since I was a little boy in Ballyhale, I dreamed of one day doing this. Henry Shefflin, 2007. What happened to us last year has finally been buried, and thanks be to God. Pat Fleury in 1985, a year after the heartbreak of losing the centenary All-Ireland. A winter in a Golliff, Tore Shockbleen August Quaga, to Crave na Hare na Rashin Yollof. Joe Connolly in 1980, in one of the great moments in Irish sport, as he especially acknowledges the emigrants before, as Micheál O'Hare puts it, the striking up of the West Awake by the great Joe McDonagh. Which finally brings us to Tipperary and Kilkenny. 28 years ago, on the first Sunday in September 1991, I attended my first All-Ireland final, and I sat directly over there in the lower Cusick on my father's knee. A little nod, a wink to the steward. We squashed into the one turnstile and on we went. Two for the price of one, Joe. Tipperary won that day with a fox, a Viking and a man named English in their full forward line. But today, will the tables be turned? I hope so. All will be revealed at 5:15 today, Joe.
Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Now, it's rare you're speechless on the air, but when Tommy Welsh steps up and does something like that, it's fairly magical, and it was. Shane Dowling is with us. Dennis Walsh of the Sunday Times with us as well. Shane, is that a tear I see in your eye?
I'd say the tear in my eye knows, because I'm not at a homecoming tonight, not listening to Tommy Walsh somehow. I know he's some man. I was actually above in, I was in Nace on Saturday night. I was on a pre-fin night up there in Nace GA Club, and he was there as well, and sure, and you listen to him all day, like he's some character. And I suppose I've done a couple of bits with him now, and I hurled against him there in the Hurling for Cancer a couple of years ago as well. And sure, you could never spend enough time with someone like him. Like what he's done in the hurling field, we all know, but he's certainly making a name for himself in the punditry side of it as well.
He does, Dennis, tap into this like unquestionable romance and poetry and almost mysticism that the game has. And like we can all roll our eyes with hurling people, and you know, you can kind of say, geez, they're very happy with themselves sometimes. But when you have a moment like that where the nine-time All-Star, nine-time All-Ireland winner is kind of laying out the tapestry and magic of the game like that, there is something very special about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, Tommy has made that transition, Joe, from the pitch to the press box, really in great style, really in really great style. But, and you know, it's funny, when I think of Kilkenny and on All-Ireland final day, when I think of Kilkenny and Tommy and his peers on that Berlin team, the one thing that they weren't was sentimental. They were the most unsentimental team you could ever imagine.
Yeah.
In terms of how they played the game and in terms of how they put opponents to the sword. But I mean, their love for the game in Kilkenny is unquestioned, and like Tommy's passion for it comes across in all his pieces.
So that was an amazing start here, and then the game itself kicked off. First 18-20 minutes, we were talking with Tommy Dunn there, Shane, and you know, I guess you guys would have experienced that Kilkenny intensity in the semi-final, and we saw glimpses of it again. I mean, they tended to be winning the 50-50s. They were coming out of rooks on top. If anything, their 5-point lead after 18, 20 minutes didn't do them justice. Like, they had a number of bad wides. They could have even been, without overstating it, 7-8 points clear.
They could, and I suppose when I spoke to you there a couple of weeks ago, like I probably tipped Kilkenny because I said that intensity, you know, we haven't come across, or Limerick hadn't come across this year. And, you know, I wasn't surprised how the game started, to be honest with you. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, they had a lot of bad wides. And I mean, if they did take them, you know, they would have been 7, 8, 9 points up. And I mean, it could have been a different game. And I suppose I know, obviously, the major talking point of the game was the sending off. But I mean, right up to that, Kilkenny were exactly where I thought they would be. Mm. You know, you saw, like, people that go on that Kilkenny don't do tactics. I mean, just have a look at where their half-forward line was yesterday. I mean, John Donnelly was back in his own half-back line numerous times picking up ball. And on that, I actually thought he had an exceptional game, you know. But, I mean, they should have been. They had a number of bad wides. And if they did take them, you know, it could have been a different game. But I suppose that was like Limerick in the semi-final. We had a lot of bad wides too. And I suppose ultimately we paid the price. And I think Kilkenny did pay the price because, you know, they didn't put enough scores on the board. And against that Tipperary forward line, I mean, you have to take every opportunity that they get. And they didn't do that. And I mean, when Tipperary got the goal, all of a sudden there was nothing in the game. Whereas if they were 8 or 9 points up and Tipperary got the goal, I mean, there's still a substantial gap. But that didn't happen. And I mean, especially in All-Ireland final day or on a big match like that, you have to take your chances. And that's something they look back on and certainly would be very disappointed with.
Yeah, and we'll get on to the sending off in just a second. But Dennis, would you share that sense that a lot of people, I think, have it looking at the coverage today, that by the time O'Mara had struck that goal, Tipperary had wangled their way back into the game and had wrestled back control and were even kind of approaching being on top by the time O'Mara struck that goal and before the Hogan sending off?
Yeah, I mean, before the sending off, I'd say definitely, Joe, before sending off. I'm not sure if they were back on top before the goal, really. I mean, there was a kind of a... They had a burst of 1-3 to go from 5 points down to a point up. And, I mean, I suppose if you look back at Kilkenny's record in All-Ireland finals, I mean, 5 points is the kind of lead that they wouldn't tend to relinquish, you know. And
it just
didn't seem like as big a lead as it would have had in other years. I mean, Shane probably remembers the start they made to the final in 2007 against Limerick, and you know they really targeted fast starts in All-Ireland finals and putting teams to the sword early. Like Sheffield went in for a forward that day, and it was all about getting an early couple of goals. And they did it to Waterford, they did it to a few teams where they just come out of blocks like a shot, and the All-Ireland final feels like it's over in 10 or 15 minutes. And you know the old Kilkenny team would have made a lot more out of that 5 point advantage than this team were able to do yesterday. And certainly before the sending off, Tipperary had righted the ship, but I'm not sure if they had before the goal really.
Fair point. Shane, were you watching in the stadium or on TV at home?
No, TV. I couldn't face going to a jet.
Fair enough. I'm sure it's not the easiest. When you see the Hogan tackle in real time, are you thinking red?
When I saw it in real time, I thought Cathal Bart dived. Been honest about it, and it was only obviously when the replays came back. And personally, I mean, I had a debate with the lads as well today, and I mean, there's been so much talk about it, but I mean, essentially, he gave him an elbow into the head, and yeah. I mean, whether he meant it or not, it's a red card, like, you know. And like, I suppose what people make about is the inconsistency, because I mean, Killian Buckley did the same thing to William McDonough in the semi-final, and that wasn't picked up on. And actually, on that, I was going to the Galway races last Friday week, and I was told to drive into this car park, and when I looked out, obviously it was Gar that was doing it. And I took a closer look. The Gar is actually Alan Kelly. This is only 5 days after the semi-final. And anyway, I got to speak to him inside and we had a great chat about everything. But and I mean, the one thing I took out of that conversation I had with him was that, I mean, he's a human at the end of the day, and he was as upset as everyone in Limerick was that he missed a couple of calls, you know, because he doesn't want that to be happening. And it's no different with James Owens yesterday. I mean, one thing I will say about James yesterday is that he showed so much composure after it happened. I mean, he took his time, he spoke to the linesmen. I thought he did everything right. And it was a red card, but then I see Cathal Bart came out today and said that, you know, his wasn't, that he was clearly going for the ball. But I mean, he may have been clearly going for the ball, but he didn't get it, and he hit Richie Hogan across the head. He split him open, and to me, that's a red card as well.
Right.
You know, do I think Richie, like, I was I felt very sorry for him. I feel very sorry for him. And I mean, me and you could talk about it and the whole hurling world can talk about it. But one thing is for sure is that Richie Hogan is someplace right now and he's as low as a snake's belly. I mean, he didn't want that to happen. He didn't go out to get sent off. And I mean, it's not as if he's another 10 years in front of him. Mm. I mean, probably most of his best days are behind him. So, you know, I feel so sorry for him today because, I mean, people have to realise that this guy is human and he's someplace today. His family is someplace today.
Mm.
But, I mean, James Owens, in my opinion, he'd no other choice. And, I mean, there's no point saying it's an All-Ireland final or Richie Hogan has a good record. They have to go by the rules. And to my opinion, an elbow into the face is a red card.
Yeah. Dennis, Brian Cody afterwards almost pointed to the fact that James Owens had consulted with his linesman and took his time to come to the decision as an indication that he was unsure himself. And Cody's line, I think, was you have to be sure if you're going to send off a man in the All-Ireland final. Yeah. Now, the flip side of that is you could argue Owens was incredibly composed, as Shane Dowling is saying there, and that, you know, if he had run over and brandished a red card, Cody might very well have said, well, he didn't even consult with his linesman, you know. So sometimes you can't win. Generally, the feeling is that Owens handled that situation very well. The vast, vast majority of people agree it's a red card. What about Shane's point there about the Barrett challenge on him, which was definitely a part of the atmosphere at that point? And Owens had arguably let a few things go, which maybe gave Hogan the false sense that he could leave one on Barrett and get away with it to some point or other.
Yeah, I mean, what was interesting about, just to go back to the original point about the Brian Cody press conference afterwards, Joe, and I saw the quote today as well, and there was this conversation about contact. Was there contact? And this seemed to be the point that Brian Cody was making. Well, you know, how could he even be sure there was contact? Now, after the semi-final, I wrote about the Killian Buckley incident, and I just went and double checked the rule book. And what it says is, if you strike or attempt to strike with the elbow, it's a red card. So you don't actually have to make contact; you just have to make an attempt to strike with the elbow. So even if Richie Hogan hadn't actually made contact with Barrett, the fact that he raised his elbow towards his head is a red card offence, as it was in the semi-final with Killian Buckley, which went unpunished. Now, like, James Owens did take his time, and I don't know if you recall, Joe, a very big call in the All-Ireland semi-final 2 years ago, Cork and Waterford, when Austin Gleeson pulled the guy's helmet off on the sideline, and he didn't put him off.
Mm.
And James Owens took a lot of heat for that decision. He had the opportunity in the days that followed, because the CCCC at the time were very keen to review that. That year that we had clamped down on face guard interference and helmet interference, and these were all red card offences.
Mm.
And James Owens was asked by the CCCC at the time, did you officiate that incident? And he said he had. So because he said he had, they couldn't revisit it, and Austin Gleeson played the final. And I'll be honest, at the time, Joe, I would have felt that was the end of James Owens as an elite inter-county referee, that to have missed an incident as big as that in the All-Ireland semi-final and then essentially blocked the CCCC from taking further action. I thought, this guy is cooked. But the other reality is, and Croke Park would, you know, accept this, there's a really inexperienced panel of inter-county referees at the moment. The quality is not as high as it was maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago. And James Owens is the most experienced guy that they have available. And I thought he did a good job yesterday on the whole. If you go back to 2013, he sent off Ryan O'Dwyer in an All-Ireland semi-final at a time in the game when Dublin were a couple of points ahead of Cork.
Mm.
The second yellow, people thought, geez, that's harsh. You know, Owens is right, but it was harsh.
Mm.
But he had the guts to do it on the day. And, you know, it was the right call. And it was the right call again yesterday. And, you know, it's tough. It's really tough on Richie Hogan, who's a super guy. He's often been a sparkling guest on your show, Joe, over the years.
It was terrible looking at him afterwards sitting there because,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'm absolutely of the opinion it's a red card.
I know he's doing terrific work with the GPA and all that.
He just made
a bad judgment yesterday. And, I certainly applaud James Owens for making a big call and making a correct call. And, like, the fact that Killian Buckley got away with it in the semi-final is neither here nor there. That was a bad call.
Yeah, I was just saying there, sorry, we were cross communication. I was saying, I'm absolutely of the opinion it was a red card, but you still feel horribly for him because it's such a heavy price to pay. What about Shane's point on the Cathal Barrett tackle on Hogan here? Because,
yeah,
you know, you could argue that Owens let too much go and it contributed in some small way to Hogan's move.
I didn't think, I mean, over the years, there was a tendency with Kilkenny games for permissive refereeing.
Yeah.
And it was like as if referees were being swept along with the kind of hurling that Kilkenny were playing. And as long as the other team were also cooperating and were in that zone with them, as I mean, I would argue in the Kilkenny Limerick semi-final, it was an incredibly intense physical match. Both teams were prepared to play in that manner. Referee, I thought as the game went on, let an awful lot go, but both teams were happy to flick away the way it was going, and he just let him at it.
Yeah.
I didn't have quite the same sense of that yesterday. But you know, that was certainly a factor when Kilkenny were at the, you know, in their masters of the universe phase, and Nolan Park training matches were no holds barred, as they still are, and people were swept along by the kind of hurling they were doing, and referees were swept along as well. I didn't get that sense yesterday, but I would have to applaud Owens for having the guts to do what he did.
Mm. So the sending off happens, and it's a sickener, it's a blow for Kilkenny. Everybody gets in at half time and rearranges. I think most people predicted that Tip would have the extra man, Shane, somewhere around their defence, and they did, and it was Kyle Barrett, and you had the likes of Ronan Maher and Barry Heffernan picking up men. There was nothing overly surprising about that. The surprising thing, it seems, people have been talking about it all day, we touched on it in the show, is Kilkenny's approach, you know, that they started off lobbing a few in on top of that full-back line, and they kept on doing it.
Yeah. Can I just revisit one thing there, Joe? Before
yes,
I
do. Do, no, by all means, yeah, yeah.
It was €90 a ticket into that game yesterday, right? And the match problems went from €5 to €7,
yeah.
Right? Now, there's no other sporting occasion in the world where amateur players would draw a crowd like that and be able to bring in so much revenue where the players get absolutely nothing. Now, there might be a perception out there by some people don't actually know that, you know, players say they don't get anything, but they actually get something. They get a GPA grant at the end of the year, which is just over €1,000. That's what inter-county players get, right? Now, I think it's about time that the GAA start investing money in the likes of VAR and helping both referees and players, because there's been, you know, there's so much effort and work going into this thing that players are putting so much, you know, they're putting their lives on hold. And for decisions like that, I think referees need help and players need help, because we're not getting paid for it. And I know there was a debate in the Sunday game last night where they were saying, you know, they should get VR. And it was kind of wishy-washy. Mm. They need to go in and do it. The money is there. Sort it out, because, you know, referees are being hung left, right and centre, and players getting very upset with certain calls. I'm not talking in the back of what happened at the end of the semi-final against us. This is going on now for years.
Mm.
And I mean, referees are being abused high up and low down on social media. I've no doubt they're getting hate mail. They're getting every sort of threats. And it's, you know, you'll always have a referee-to-referee in Ireland turn final, but you're not going to get referees for club games across the country unless they're being protected. And I mean, you know, it's fine, €90, it's a good spectacle. But I mean, even the programmes, everything is being increased and nobody's getting anything out of it. So I think it needs to be addressed and fairly quickly. As I said it the last time, and I feel very strongly on it, you know, players are working too hard, referees are doing their best and are not being helped. It's about time to go in and sort it out.
Yeah, no, fair point. It's good to get a current player on making those points. So say in the instance of yesterday, you would like James Owens to be able to come over and look at a picture of the foul, or to get somebody upstairs to give him advice,
no.
or what would you like?
I mean, within 10 seconds, I knew yesterday that was a red card.
Yeah.
Right? So all he needs, like Dickie Murphy does the Hawkeye, right, above wherever that is, right? You have someone appointed to do that with a television upstairs so he can go over and speak to Johnny Murphy, and a little whisper comes down and say, hey, James, it's a definite red card. Go ahead and do it. Or, hey, Alan Kelly, it's definitely a sideline. Give the 65. It would save so much controversy. And Barry Kelly made a good point. You can't do it for every call or every decision, because the referee has to referee the game. And, I mean, if you did it for every, you know, free, a push in the back or a chop in the hurley, that's not what it needs to be brought in for. It needs to be brought in for big calls, you know, so that referees can get things right and players can get the just reward for the efforts that they're putting in off the pitch.
It's very hard to argue with that, in fairness. And actually, it was just a thought I had going to the semi-final, where tickets were €50 in the stand, and so tickets €90 now for the All-Ireland finals, and the programmes, that's inexplicable, really, is that they're jacking those up from €5 to €7. I'm just not sure what that's about. You do look at the whole thing, and for me, it's all just on the wrong side of being good value for money. Like, it's fine, you can justify it. You can say, well, look what they're paying in the IRFU. But by the same token, the IRFU, 86% of their total revenue comes from those test matches at home. And they have a fairly healthy bill. Like, the biggest bill in any sport is what you're paying in wages. So when none of the players are getting wages, I don't know if it's actually good enough that the GAA stuff at this level is just kind of past or even close to okay value for money, and sometimes not great value for money. The GAA should be, like, without being socialist, it should be the best value for money ticket going. It should be like, you know, these fan-owned German football clubs where you pay in. Why should a All-Ireland final be €40? Like, why not? Why couldn't that happen is something I'm wondering lately. Or looking at the semi-final tickets, why couldn't they be €35? Instead of in just the wrong side of good value for money, why not put them like brilliant value? And I'm not quite sure what the answer to that is. I know they'll say they're investing it all over the country, but I don't know. When the fans prop up the whole organisation, increasingly I'm looking at the price of tickets thinking it's just that little, just creeping up that bit too much, I think, for my liking anyway.
Joe, you see yesterday, like, take the GAA and Croke Park out of it. Look at the hotels that made the money yesterday. Look at the bars around Dublin that made money yesterday. Look at all the bars in Semple Stadium tonight and in Kilkenny yesterday. I mean, look at Éireann Ruth Éireann. There are so many people making a whole pile of money out of this. And the only people that are getting no money are the players. And they're the people that are creating the revenue for so many businesses across the country on big days like this. I'm not saying the players are looking for money. What the players are looking for is to get the best possible facilities there so that, you know, a decision isn't going to be made by a referee who's human and his two eyes making a human error. That's all I'm saying.
Now, that's a hell of a tangent I've contributed to. So back to Kilkenny's play in the second
half. Yes, no, and I remember your question. I felt strongly about that.
No, good
so,
man.
Listen, I was at home, you know, watching the game. And I mean, if ever there was a day to run the ball and to play through the lines, that was a day. I mean, it happens once, it happens twice, it happens three times. You say, fine. You know, I mean, that's where you would think maybe a Mayor Freerna or someone would come in and give an instruction. I mean, I know John Donnelly got a lovely pint in the middle of the field. You know, that ball was worked out through the lines and the score was on. And I mean, yeah, they might have got a pint or two from it. And at times, long ball does work. Don't get me wrong, I'm as traditional as they come.
Yeah.
I mean, Noel McGrath got a free yesterday and he fired the ball into the edge of the square to 2-on-2. John McGrath won the break and fired it over the bar. But I mean, these days, it just, you know, with a spare man, it was so easy for Ronan Maher there yesterday just to break the ball and for Cathal Barr to run away with it. They needed to run the ball through the lines, and on numerous occasions, they just fired the ball in and they were getting little to no return out of it. You know, and I know Henry Shefflin said last night that it's not Kilkenny way, it's not how they do it. But I mean, sometimes, you know, you have to change. You could see it wasn't working, and I suppose I was surprised by it. I know many people were surprised by it, especially when it worked. You know, especially when they were playing the short ball and they were getting a return off it, but they just didn't do it enough.
Well, that's the thing, because Dennis, it had become a little bit the Kilkenny way of late.
Well, they have become certainly, I guess, not modern so much, but I mean, they have been more reactive to the way the game, to how the game has been played now. And you know, a couple of years ago, you never would have seen cornerbacks being first receiver for a puck out from Owen Murphy, but you know, that was the case in the semi-final against Limerick, for example. And you know, you wouldn't have seen. You know, the last couple of years they have been working the ball through the lines more. I mean, I think they probably on the Sunday game during the summer there was a very good package where they pointed out how different Kilkenny's approach was to playing Wexford, for example, 2 years ago in Wexford Park, to them playing Wexford this year, where five of the Kilkenny defenders actually scored. You know, because they were on the ball in those positions going forward, which again wasn't Kilkenny's way maybe going back the year. So I mean, they have changed their approach to reflect the way the game has gone, and you know, and to be more effective against teams like Wexford, for example, who play with extra defenders. But I mean, the point yesterday was, and I suppose, so much again when Kilkenny were at a different level and they had their you know, their brilliant team, they used to dominate teams in the air. They used to absolutely kill teams in the air. They were very good in the air against Limerick in the semi-final. I think 11 Kilkenny scores came from puckouts, from long puckouts. So they haven't lost that facility, but it just didn't do them any favours yesterday. I mean, Tipperary were magnificent in the air. Like Barry Heffernan, Ronan Maher, Pádraig Maher caught clean ball over their opponents, contested ball, and like it was like the kind of stuff that we would have seen over the years from Tommy Welch and JJ Delaney and others like that. And But yeah, I think the way they played certainly played into Tipperary's hands with the extra defender and so on.
On the puck-out situation, the stats were amazing as well, because after Hogan's dismissal, Kilkenny went short twice. Brendan Cummins had this today in the paper. Kilkenny went short twice off puck-outs and won both of them. They went long 23 times and won just 5. So the whole puck-out thing even kind of disintegrated, an amazing stat. Tip went short 8 times, they won all 8. A lot of the time they got Ronan Maher and Noel McGrath on the ball, and they went longer 4 times and won 3 of them. So really, like, they had a field day from the puck-outs. They were the stats in. So, like, where does this put Tipperary then, Dennis? Because a lot of people have made the point that 2 in 10 years might have felt like something of an underachievement for such a talented bunch. Like, we had Shane McGrath on the show earlier, and he was sort of saying of Pádraig Maher, Brendan Maher, Noel McGrath, Seamus Callanan, the first time since the 1960s that Tipperary have had players who have 3 All-Ireland medals. Like, this is a historic achievement. And Shane McGrath was saying, like, some of these are kind of our class in 92. They are phenomenal players. 2 All-Irelands in 10 years would have felt like a bit of an underachievement. 3 in 10 with, hopefully, I presume from Tip point of view and Sheedy at the helm, the promise of good times ahead. But 3 in 10 does have the feel of greatness now.
Yeah, no, 3 in 10, I'd say, is probably about par for what that, for a group of that talent should be winning. I mean, look, it's all very well to say that. Jeez, I've no idea how hard it is. Shane knows far more than me about that. But I mean, it's been a tough era to be trying to win All-Irelands. I mean, with Kilkenny so brilliant for most of it, and you know, for the last 20 years been so dominant, and they were the team who were most often the second best team in the country in the last 10 years. Like, they were the team that gave Kilkenny the most trouble on a consistent basis. So, you know, there was certainly honour in that, and there was, you know, but there was also disappointment and frustration in that. And, you know, that group of the talent that those guys have, the guys that you mentioned, I mean, those are once in a generation players, you know, for Tip or for any county. I mean, amazing players. And, you know, 3 All-Irelands is a lot for anybody. Jesus, an awful lot. But the big thing for Tip now, and it's going to be the conversation for the winter, is, you know, they haven't put back-to-back All-Irelands together since the 60s. And,
yeah,
you know, they're very conscious of it. I'm sure it's something that Sheedy, you know, would absolutely be busting the gut to try to achieve. You know, that would be a real kind of, that would be a real marker for this generation, something kind of a monumental achievement for them and for this group. And, like, you know, those guys now, too, they've been around. 2008, Shimmy Callan made his debut, you know. Noel McGrath came along a year later. You know, they're around an awful long time. They played in minor finals in 06 and 07. So, you know, there mightn't be a whole pile left in this group as we know it now. And, like, those really are the key guys.
Mm. Yeah, I guess the 20s are coming through, and off the bench they're making an impact, but I definitely take your point. Shane, you're probably better placed than most to answer this. I'm only talking about 2 years, so it's a small sample size, but since the Wren Robins have come in, the beaten Munster finalists have won the All-Ireland. Is it a disadvantage to be winning Munster at this stage? Is there something about losing out in Munster that makes the route through better?
Yeah, like I said it the last time, I don't believe so. Again, I know the stats will go against my belief, but I mean, I said it this year, we had 4 weeks off after the Munster final. We got a week off to ourselves to go in and relax. We came back, we had 3 weeks worth of work to do. We had 2 very, very good weeks, hard weeks, and then we had the week leading into it. I mean, we were set up perfectly for it, but we just didn't perform on the day, and that's the bottom line, really. You know, I don't think you'll see any teams next year. I mean, it's hard enough. Get out of Munster, let alone be conscious of whether you end up in a Munster final or not.
Mm.
I mean, you could see the scenes in Limerick this year after we won it, and you could see the scenes in Croke Park when Wexford won their Leinster Championship, you know. So, listen, everyone's going to have different opinions of it. If you're big into your stats, you'll say, you know, it's not good to win your provincial championship in terms of the All-Ireland. Again, I don't believe so, and that's just the way it is. I mean, you look at the guy hit Liam Sheedy, you know, I'd say it's my first year in 2012 or 2013. I was on the Railway Cup at a time when the Railway Cup was slowly slipping away.
Mm.
But there was still a lot of, you know, legends that I grew up watching that were on that panel, and I was delighted to be part of it. And, you know, I've had some fantastic managers, you know, in my career to date. You know, Shane Neal and the Piershig, you know, John that's there. I've had a lot, of, you know, it's not even fair to name too, because I've had a lot. But, I mean, Liam Sheedy, at that time, when the Railway Cup was slipping away and it wasn't as important, I just was buzzing after him. I'd be straight up about it, you know, and I wouldn't have seen at the time, like, he'd obviously have a lot more passion for Tipperary than he would for a Railway Cup.
Yeah.
He might have been able to surround himself with the team that he had with Munster than he has with Tipperary. But, I mean, you'll be jumping out of your skin to play for him, you know. And I can only, if that's what it was like over a team like that, I can only imagine what it's like with Tipperary. And you can be damn sure that when Liam sits down at the end of the year next year, he'll want to win the Munster Championship and want to win that Ireland Championship, definitely.
And what was it about him, Shane? Like, can you remember any thing he said in particular?
It was his energy. It was the way he spoke to players. It was the way he spoke in the dressing room. It was just the buzz he has off him, like, you know.
He's
a fantastic speaker. You know, he's obviously a fantastic public speaker, but he's fantastic in the dressing room as well. You know, when he speaks to you, geez, you'd be ready to go through a wall for him. I know I certainly was anyway. And I mean, when I heard that Liam was appointed as Tipperary manager, I said to a number of people, I think Tipperary are going to win that Ireland in the next 2 years. I hope I'm wrong. I hope Limerick win the next 2 years. But, you know, basically what I meant was that I wasn't surprised.
Yeah.
I was surprised the players responded for him. And, I mean, you look at that Tipperary team, there's some serious characters in that dressing room.
Mm.
Characters that, you know, might come around again for a long, long time. And when you have Gerlach Nan coming out and, you know, absolutely slating them there one day when they were beaten, and then you have Jackie Tyrrell coming out and in his book and saying that they're, you know, it was easy, you know, get into them mentally or whatever, you know. I mean, them boys don't stand for that. Liam Sheedy doesn't stand for that. And I wasn't one bit surprised. People saying their legs were gone. I wasn't one bit surprised that team came back and won that Ireland, because they're plenty good enough to do it. I mean, they have the best forwards in the country. Bubbles of the Wire put a score over there in front of the Cusick stand. I'd say if I tried to do it, I'd pop my two shoulders or something. I don't know how we done it. So, you know, they're just class hurlers when they get to
Oh, dear. Well, you're being modest. I think you scored the best goal of the year. That's for sure, anyway. Just a very final one, Dennis. We've about 30-40 seconds tops. That's Tipperary boxed off, and we're looking forward to what they bring next year, and I'm sure Shane's ready to go next year. What about Kilkenny? Back with Cody and back again, and they'll make the most of every moment and give it a good crack again. Is that what you fully expect?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's not going to be any chance there, Joe. I mean, I think it was an incredible achievement, I think, for them to get to the final this year with a group that was kind of coming together on the hoof. I mean, they used 27 players this year in the championship, which is an extraordinary number, until you look back to 2014, when they actually won the All-Ireland by using 29 different players.
Mm.
And, like, you know, he said it a million times, but he does believe it, that he's not bothered about a settled team, only a settled spirit. And there's a whole lot of guys this year now who have... I mean, John Donnelly was terrific yesterday. And, like, he's a guy who wasn't sure of his place for half the summer, but no, he's having a turn, and he was excellent against Limerick as well. So here's a guy that's really after coming through, Adrian Mullen. You know, they still have guys coming, and Hugh Lawler, again, a guy that has huge promise. You know, had a tough day maybe yesterday, but these are guys for the future, and Kilkenny are going nowhere. They're going to be in the top 3 or 4 again next year for sure.
Okay, well, Dennis, thanks very much. And by the way, if people didn't see your piece with Joe Hayes yesterday in the Sunday Times, they should check it out. It was brilliant. Reid and Shane Dowling, as ever, pleasure. Thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
GAA on Off the Ball.